I wonder if you've ever felt unfairly accused. You feel like, you know, look, deep down, I know I'm not perfect, but I think in this situation, I think I'm innocent, but people are after me. This is all just theoretical. It can never really happen to us as pastors that people would be against us or people would be after us. So just try to imagine a scenario since we've never actually been in this situation. But today in our text, I hope we'll find both a caution and an encouragement when we feel like people are after us. When people are after us and we feel like even they're wrong in their pursuit. So let's look, 1 Samuel 21. Then David came to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest. And Ahimelech came to meet David, trembling, and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one with you?" And David said to Ahimelech the priest, "The king has charged me with a matter and said to me, 'Let no one know anything of the matter about which I send you and about which I have charged you. I've made an appointment with the young men for such and such a place.' Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever is here." And the priest answered David, "I have no common bread on hand, but there is holy bread, if the young men have kept themselves from women." And David answered the priest, "Truly women have been kept from us, as is always when I go on an expedition. The vessels of the young men are holy, even when it is an ordinary journey. How much more today will their vessels be holy?" So the priest gave him the holy bread. But there was no bread there but the bread of the presence, which is removed from before the Lord to be replaced by hot bread on the day it is taken away. Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord. His name was Doeg the Edomite, the chief of Saul's herdsmen. Then David said to Ahimelech, "Then have you not here a spear or a sword at hand? For I have brought neither sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste." And the priest said, "The sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom you struck down in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here, wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you will take it, for there is none but that here." And David said, "There is none like it. Give it to me." And David rose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said to him, "Is not this David, the king of the land? Did they not sing to one another of him in dances? Saul has struck down his thousands and David his 10,000s? And David took these words to heart and was much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. So he changed his behavior before them and pretended to be insane in their hands and made marks on the doors of the gate and let his spittle run down his beard. Then Achish said to his servants, "Behold, you see the man is mad. Why then have you brought him to me? Do I like madmen? As you brought this fellow to behave as a madman in my presence, shall this fellow come into my house?" But today in this honestly curious text, I'd like for us to see this emphasis. Brothers, be careful of ungodly means and unwise decisions when facing opposition. But trust in our faithful high priest. And today we'll look at our text in just two parts. The escape to Nob and then hiding in Gath. Now our passage today picks up right after what we just talked about, this moving story of David and Jonathan, where it's become clear that Saul intends to kill Jonathan. So Jonathan has urged David to flee. They have this tearful farewell. Now the passage today is a challenging one because we see the actions of David that honestly raise a number of questions. I've been thinking about this text for weeks since it's been assigned to me, wondering why was I stuck with chapter 21? Could I dodge it? Could I catch COVID this afternoon? Could I in some way avoid this challenging text? As we see, there also, in addition to this text, we see several reflections of David in the Psalms about these very instances. And we wrestle with whether we need to justify all of David's actions because he's God's anointed, or do we see them as failures of David while also seeing that God was at work in and through David, and certainly through David's writings, his reflections in the Psalms during these events? That those writings are absolutely God's inspired word, good, true, and right, even if the actions are not. And so we see that David makes his way to Nob, and this is where the tabernacle was at this time. The ark was not there, but the rest of the tabernacle and the functioning was happening there, as evidenced by the bread of the presence that was there that day. And we see in the text, when David arrives, he meets the priest, Ahimelech. And Ahimelech comes out to meet David, and when Ahimelech meets David, Ahimelech is afraid. He's trembling. And it seems that what Ahimelech is nervous about is like, why is David here alone? We're not sure all that Ahimelech knows, but clearly David is this, you know, well-known figure, powerful warrior. And now he shows up by himself. Like, why wouldn't he have this sort of band of brothers with him? Does Ahimelech perhaps know through the grapevine of Saul's desires to harm David? We don't know. It's possible that word would have traveled to Ahimelech by this time. So David gives an answer to try to calm Ahimelech's fears. He tells the priest that he's on a secret mission from King Saul. He's James Bond. But this is, as we know, obviously not the case. The king has not sent him here on a mission. David's running for his life. Now, we're not sure. Maybe David thought that he would somehow protect Ahimelech. Seems to be perhaps what he's thinking, that if he tells Ahimelech this story, if eventually Saul finds out, that Ahimelech can say that he was helping out, so he's in some way trying to protect Ahimelech. Somehow he's trying to convince Ahimelech to help him here. And so David asks the priest, what do you have on hand in verse 3? And he asks first for bread. And the priest explains that he doesn't have any common bread, but only this holy bread, this bread of the presence. It's not something that typically a priest would give to others, but he says that David and his men could have it so long as they've been consecrated, so long as they've kept themselves holy, and David says that they were. Interesting that Jesus even alludes to this in Matthew chapter 12. And Jesus, when he alludes to it, makes clear that this was appropriate, and he points to the spirit of the law, which was mercy. And that David is here shown mercy by Ahimelech the priest in the giving of this bread to him. And then we see in the text this interesting mention, clear foreshadowing, verse 7. This man by the name of Doeg, the Edomite, who just happens to be there, detained before the Lord. Not exactly sure what that means, but he's the chief of Saul's herdsmen. Just mentioned there, but as we read, we think that's going to come back around. There's something else to this, and then the story moves forward. Then David moves from bread. David also needs a weapon, he says. And so he says to the priest, do you have any weapons? Seems an odd thing for this warrior to ask the priest, hey, can you equip me with some weapons? And it seems really strange. You're sent by the king on a special mission with no weapons? Seems another place where David's story just doesn't seem to add up. And Ahimelech says, well, I do. I have one weapon. There's only one weapon here. And what is it? The sword of Goliath. And so David takes the sword, this unique sword of Goliath, who he had killed, as Ahimelech mentions. So what are we to make of David's actions? How do we interpret this? What do we attribute to this? Well, clearly David is fleeing in fear because we know Saul wants to kill him. That's obvious. So there's a very real danger. There's a very real reason for fear. It's not an irrational fear to think he's going to lose his life, because that's the fact. And yet, David's response to this legitimate danger is misdirected. He goes to the right place. He goes to the tabernacle. But does he go to the priest of God asking the priest, pray for me, counsel me? I mean, I'm terrified. Can you give me some guidance? But when he goes, he's not there primarily to pray. It does seem that by an explanation in the next chapter that Ahimelech says that he did inquire of the Lord for David, but that's obviously not the front of David's mind here. So David, in the midst of this legitimate fear, doesn't pursue the means that God had provided. He doesn't turn to God or to God's priest, but instead David turns to his own best plan. And the best plan he seems to have is to go to the priest and lie to the priest. David doesn't tell the truth about the circumstance. He doesn't tell the truth about his own plans. And David takes the sword of Goliath. On the one hand, that actually seems like a good move. And if you need a weapon, why not take the best sword? I mean, this was a significant weapon, Goliath's sword. But remember back what we saw in chapter 17 when David faced off with Goliath? And back then, David had said, 17:46 and following, this day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down, cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air, to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. So back then David said, the Lord saves not with sword and spear. After David strikes him down with a stone and a sling, we see this, chapter 17, verse 50. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. And then it says this interesting line, there was no sword in the hand of David. So the Lord had powerfully delivered David over Goliath. Not with a significant, impressive sword, not with a spear. The Lord had delivered in the most simple way. Was David now going to trust in the sword? Had he advanced now? Now's the time to take up a sword. I didn't need one then. But now I'll take a sword today. God had promised that David would be made king. David knew this promise. But David doesn't trust the promise of God. He doubts this promise, and this fear instead dominates. And in his fear, he chooses misdirected plans. And friends, in our own fear as well, it's very tempting to doubt the promises of God to us, his people. And it's so very tempting to take matters into our own hands and to even use methods that are ungodly, that are worldly. Sometimes in ministry, it's true, we're wrongly accused. Not perfect, but in this situation, I think I'm innocent, but they're after me. And what I do is I fight fire with fire. We're tempted to use here manipulation, tempted to be dishonest, using the world's methods instead of trusting the promises of our God. So, brother, I want to know some ways right now you're tempted. Challenges in your church. And obviously, the last couple of years have been some of the most challenging decades in local churches. I know some ways you feel the pain of being accused. It feels like people are after you, but are you using some ungodly methods? Maybe you've not yet used them, but you feel like you're about to reach for them. To lie, to cover yourself from the ungodly actions of others. And yet, even as this is playing out, God was at work in David's heart. Because it's interesting, we see David's reflections in Psalm 34 in the superscript. We're told it's about this situation. So though David, I would argue, is making some ungodly choices, he is processing and thinking and coming to understand more of God's grace, even in the midst of that. That's how kind God is. So in reflection, David says this, Psalm 34:4, I sought the Lord and he answered me and delivered me from all my fears. David was fearful, he says, and the Lord delivered him. Psalm 34:8, oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Later on, Psalm 34:18, the Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. Brother, it's painful to have people opposed to us, isn't it? Members who we love, who we've given ourselves for, who've sacrificed, and now they're after us. It's natural to feel a broken heart. Brother, hear this word. The Lord is near to you. He is with you. In fact, in you by the Spirit. So take refuge in your Lord today. So David has the sword. What does he do? We see the next, it's hiding in Gath. David then continues to flee that day and makes his way to Gath, which seems to be a really bad plan. Honestly, it looks incredibly foolish because Gath is where Goliath is from. And what's he carrying into Gath? Goliath's sword. I mean, I was trying to think of a sports illustration that even fits this. And I mean, Tom Brady, he's won so many championships. But you know, it's like him walking into Atlanta, you know, with the Super Bowl trophy, and like, why the Falcon fans not like me? I don't understand why they're out to get me. And so David is well known. He's the one that killed Goliath. And he's carrying the sword, and he's thinking somehow, these guys are going to protect me. They're going to welcome me in and be a refuge for me. But the king of Gath, Achish's men, they recognize David. They understand what's going on here. And they even know the song. The hit song. Brother, will you sing the song for us? Yeah. Saul has struck down his thousands, but David his 10,000. They knew the tune. They've heard the song. And the song is about them. You know, David's the hero, but it's their people that were killed. And David hears this and realizes, yikes. This is not playing out the way I thought it was going to go. I thought I could sort of just be in refuge here, and now they're after me. And so David changes his plan again. And what's his plan now? He starts acting like he's out of his mind. Scratching on the wall, drool running on his beard. I mean, this is really odd stuff. And I love the king's response. Verse 14, it says to his servants, behold, you see this man is mad. Why didn't you brought him to me? Do I like madmen? Like, I have plenty of madmen. I don't need more. I mean, it's like if you're, you know, if you're a pastor and somebody brings some visitors to your church and they're like troublemakers from another church and you're like, look, bro, I don't need more of them. I've got plenty. So don't bring those guys here. We see in verse 21 verse 12. It says, David took these words to heart and was much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. What an interesting thing to be said of David. Afraid of the king. Wasn't this the guy when everyone else was afraid of Goliath? He's like, who's this talking bad about my God? Like, I'll go at him. He's afraid of the king? It seems that David's fear is causing him to make one unwise choice after another. He's going to carry Goliath's sword in, and they'll welcome him? Of course not. Fakes that he's insane? All to try to escape. And brothers, I wonder, when you're overwhelmed with fear or frustration or just the pain of attacks, how do you sometimes try to escape? And if you're honest, are there some unwise, perhaps even profoundly ungodly paths that at the very least are very tempting to you right now? Or maybe nobody else knows, but you've been taking those paths of escape. And you know how unwise and destructive they are. So it might be just the escape of, you know, wasting time in certain things. It might be the escape of abusing a substance. It might be the unwise escape of pornography. It might be the unwise escape of just, you know, mulling this situation over in your head. They're going to say this, I'm going to say that. Sort of play out the conversation, even though the conversation maybe never happens. That's something I struggle with sometimes. I mean, I can just spend the day just replaying. Yeah, if they said this, I'd say that. Here's it. And I always come out on top, you know, in that back and forth. But it just consumes my soul all day long. Brother, there are foolish ways you're trying to escape right now. And yet, notice, friends, God is still faithful to David. Even though David's making foolish, unwise, I'd say ungodly choices, that's how good God is. He still preserves him. Friends, God is faithful to his people. He's faithful to us. Brother, he'll be faithful to you. We hear David's reflections also on this in Psalm 56. Psalm 56, 3 and 4, David reflects and says, "When I'm afraid, I put my trust in you. In God, whose word I praise, in God I trust, I shall not be afraid. What can flesh do to me?" The story continues. We'll see tomorrow in chapter 22. And some of you guys have worked the text. The story takes a dark turn because Ahimelech is confronted by Saul. Asked, "Why were you helping out David?" What happens to Ahimelech is somebody rats him out. And who is it? Doeg, the Edomite. The guy who was just mentioned in passing says, "Oh, by the way, king, I saw this. The priest was helping out David." What had Ahimelech done? He'd shown mercy to David. The priest of God had cared for David, shown mercy to David, provided for him food and even protection, this weapon, and then Ahimelech, the priest, would die because of David, because of David's sin. David even says, "It's my fault that all these folks have died." So the priest dies. Of course, the good news for us is that when we are fearful, when we fail, we have an even greater priest who died for our sins. Right? Jesus, the perfect priest, came. And he suffered because of our own rebellion, because of our lies, because of our unwise, foolish, rebellious choices. Hebrews 10 says this of our great high priest, "Therefore, brothers, since we have confidence to enter the holy places by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain, that is, through his flesh. Since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience, our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful." Friends, that's good news for us. When we're fearful and when we're engaged in folly, when we're foolishly sinning, that is our great high priest. David, of course, the anointed one, here wasn't perfect, as we see in our text. But the greater David, Jesus, was. He also was sought, pursued. Jesus also was falsely accused. But he was never dishonest. Always spoke the truth. When his disciples tried to pick up a sword, he told them, put it down. He refused to fight back. He was accused by his family of being out of his mind. His opponent said, he's got a demon. Oh, but Jesus was not out of his mind, was he? Clear-minded, he, the perfect king, is the one who came to rescue us. And now that king reigns today. And brothers, by the Spirit that dwells in you, we can live that sort of life today. When opposed, brother, today, you don't have to live in fear. We don't have to choose sinful paths. We don't have to be unwise. We don't have to even fight back when opposed. We can entrust ourselves to Him, even if we lose in this life. Even if we lose it all, even if we lose our church, wrongly accused. Friends, the good news is the Lord, Psalm 34:22, the Lord redeems the life of his servants. And none of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. In Psalm 56:9 through 11, it says this. Then my enemies will turn back in the day when I call. This I know, that God is for me. In God, whose word I praise, in the Lord, whose word I praise, in God I trust. I shall not be afraid. What can man do to me? Brothers, those are good words for us. Hear this today. God is for you. So you don't have to be afraid. Brother, what can man do to you? So brothers, don't use worldly means. Don't choose ungodly paths. Don't fight fire with fire. Walk in integrity and trust your always faithful King. Brothers, be encouraged. Your God is with you, always with you, and He is for you. And He will keep you to the end. Let's pray.